Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, did the AFL get the bye right? Silly season continues and we have a very brief look at the four finals.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh!
Stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, it's Tuesday, which means it's time for this week's first edition of the Duff and Quarters podcast. We had no AFL football at the weekend, but we did have some terrific waffle football. We saw an absolute standout performance from Malian Pickett on Saturday for South Fremantle, and we saw a standout performance from Claremont against East Perth in the elimination final on Sunday. I'm Mark Duffield. I'm the senior football writer of the West Australia, and I have with me Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. Quarters.
Duff.
The bye weekend before the finals.
I love it.
You love it?
Yeah, I love it. People are carrying on about it. They could put it to better use. However, I like the idea. It takes away that ability to compromise your team. It gives the players a rest. They're heading into finals. I think there's several players who wouldn't have got up last weekend who will get up this week. Pendlebury's one, Buddy Franklin's another. I like it. Let's get ourselves right going into the finals and have the best possible footy.
Okay, so if you're in charge of the AFL, you're Gillon McLachlan, and you're not a balding, greying sort of man with a bit of a tummy. You're a long, lanky, handsome drink of water with a carefully manicured bun of hair on top of your head.
A bouffant. Yes.
What are you doing with the bye?
A couple of priority picks to the hall. I'm having the Brownlow. It's long bugged me, Duff, why you have it in grand final week when there's often teams who can't go because they're playing in the grand final and they're interstate clubs. And it also puts a lot of pressure on the player if he's participating in the grand final. I think you have it the first week, get it out of the way during the bye weekend, have it on the Saturday night, make it a big event, and then away you go. And it just gives the type player, I guess, the winner time to absorb it if he's indeed going to participate in the grand final. And it allows the interstate clubs to take part because I think they should be able to go over there and just be part of it, or over here, wherever it's held. But I think that's my solution to it. I don't mind the lead-up of awards we had this week. I didn't think they lost anything because one backed into another. I thought they were all, you could judge them all on their merit. Yeah, I think it's pretty well right. I mean, it's a good, I like it. And it refreshes us too. Don't you feel a bit refreshed, Duff?
I do. I had a weekend of watching waffle football, I have to say. I watched the South Fremantle-West Perth game on the television on Saturday.
So Malian Pickett can pack his bags, maybe head up the Goldie or to somewhere else. There's three or four clubs interested, I believe.
I would have thought there'd be more than three or four now. That was an astonishing display of skill, I think, from him on Saturday afternoon. He had 28 possessions. He kicked four goals. A couple of the overhead marks, a couple of the tear-away bursts. This guy's an AFL athlete. I know he's 26 years old. He probably should have been taken 2 years ago. But there were some off-field concerns there, which I think the off-field concerns, I think, were put to bed probably 6 or 7 years ago, not 3 or 4 years ago. So I think they probably should have, someone should have bitten the bullet and moved a little bit earlier on him. But I would be absolutely staggered and gobsmacked if he's not on an AFL list.
I think you're right.
I watched the Colts, the Peel Thunder versus Swans on Sunday. I saw Charlie Cameron's younger brother run around. He looks a good type.
Yeah, get picked up.
He's on West Coast Next Generation Academy Raider, and I believe...
Do they have the guns out?
He's pretty skinny.
No, we're watching him during the under-18s, state 18.
Oh, he's got a bit of swagger.
Oh, yeah, he had the guns out. He had the gun stance during the 18s this year.
Yeah, no, he's got a bit of swagger.
Oh, that'll take him 5 minutes to get knocked out of him at AFL level.
I think he's going to get a... he's going to get a good bollocking early on.
Oh, well, that's all right.
I think at AFL level, but he certainly can play. And I'm told that as well as West Coast obvious interest, I'm told that GWS is very interested and may make an early bid, which will test West Coast will to take him. So there was a good bit of talent on display. It was also Fremantle's next generation boy, Jason Carter, was in Peel Thunder's best as well in a pretty hard fought game. And then of course we saw Claremont put East Perth into mothballs, which was a terrific
end of the alignment game too.
Yes, and fittingly, they rested players in the last quarter when East Perth needed them on the ground, which probably it kind of put a punctuation mark on why the alignment model is being put to bed at that particular club. So
we can expect an announcement over the next few months on how the Eagles structure will work and what East Perth will get in terms of helping boost them in numbers a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to throw one out there on this one, Quarters, and I think that it's not often that the Waffle clubs have leverage. And West Coast needs the approval of Waffle clubs to get their own team into the Waffle. So right now the Waffle clubs have leverage. We have a Waffle club with a $700,000 debt that needs fixing up. I mean, you know, sometimes you're a windscreen and sometimes you're a bug. If I was the Waffle clubs, I'd be saying, the first thing we need you to do is we need you to take care of their debt and any other Waffle club that has a significant debt. You do that, and then you abide by conditions A to Z, and you have a team in the competition. You don't do that, then maybe you need to be looking for another alignment club. I think the Waffle clubs need to play some hardball on this one. West Perth is a very proud club. They had 3 or 4 years of financial misadventure, slobbed the club in some serious issues. I think that would be one condition I'd be putting on West Coast having their own standalone Waffle club in the competition.
So let's say the 4 cents in the dollar is accepted to their creditors, which it seems it will be.
Why should it be, though? We have an AFL club not just with millions of dollars in the bank, with tens of millions of dollars in the bank.
Well, I think there's a bit, and West Perth has accumulated a bit of money in the last few weeks too. So I would tend to agree with you on that point. However, I do believe that they will accept 4 cents in the dollar, so they'll move forward.
Well, but I think football has a shoddy reputation for yours is mine and mine is mine. Mm. And we see it in stadium negotiations. We see football constantly leaning on the community. And I think it would be a good message to send to the community if football paid its debts on this one. So whatever West Perth creditors are, that they are paid pretty much in full, as opposed to, 4 cents in the dollar. That's a pretty ordinary payout for if you're a creditor of the West Perth Football Club. I want to see West Perth go on. I'd like to see them change their name to Joondalup because I think
that's the only thing they can do. They have to do it. Now, I don't think it's a question. I think that will be forced on them, and rightly so. That's where they're located now.
So the West Perth Football Club trading as the Joondalup Falcons.
Yep.
That's what I would like to see them do.
So you retain your rich history. Yep. But you embrace what you are now, which is based as the Northern Suburb Club, and you are the Joondalup Falcons. And I think it sends out an olive branch to a whole heap of sponsors, prospective sponsors, the Joondalup City Council, everyone. I think they'll find more people will get behind them, and they could be in a more sound financial position in 4 or 5 years down the track.
Yep, I hope so. I hope you're right. If you did have the Brownlow medal mm-hmm. in the bye week, getting back to what we mm-hmm. start off on, which night would you have it?
I'd go just on the weekend. I'd have it on a Saturday night.
Would you?
Hmm. Make it a big event, have your whole weekend around it, big lead up with the red or the blue carpet, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I'd have it on the Saturday. I'd see no problem with that.
My only problem with that would be that your first final's going to be on a Thursday night, and that means that, and you want everybody there, don't you? One of the reasons why you do this in the bye week is to get everybody there. Let's say West Coast get scheduled to play on the Thursday, and you're asking Jeremy McGovern, Luke Shuey, Josh Kennedy and a couple of others to fly to Melbourne and then fly back with only a 5-day break before they play. I would be more inclined to get it out of the way early and have a few of the other awards.
Yeah, you could do that. I'm just not sure that it takes. I mean, it is a flight. I guess it's a good 8 hours, I guess, but there's no game on the end of it. So I'm not sure how much it's taking out of them, but yeah, I'd be flexible with it. I just think it should be in that week.
So let's say Thursday into Thursday.
That'd be okay. Yeah, yeah. I like the idea of the Saturday. It just you could build the other awards into the big one. But I see your point.
And I think another thing you could do, Quarters, if you wanted to, is most of the. So let's take the Waffle now. The Waffle is a 2x9-round season, which means an 18-round season, which means it's 4 weeks shorter than the AFL. Why wouldn't you set the Waffle up so that the Waffle Grand Final was in the bye weekend on the Saturday night at Optus Stadium?
There may be an argument that they would like their alignment teams to continue a bit longer if they're playing in the...
But there are ways around that, aren't there? But there will be 30 mature age waffle players trying to get onto an AFL list, and you put them in a team and you say you're going to be playing West Coast for the next 3 weeks in a series of games.
Yeah, I guess you could do that, record. Yeah.
And you invite every talent scout around the country to watch that game, and the West Coast players get their match practice, and a few waffle players get paid to showcase their skills. I think that's doable.
I've got another high horse I need to jump on, Duff. This has been bugging me for years. It's the Grand Final Entertainment.
Who is it this year?
Well, I don't know. They haven't announced it yet. I think they're announcing it later this week. But I just can't see for the life of me why we don't fate Australian talent. I don't know why we have to go year after year for international talent. I think it should be Australian bands, and I think it's a no-brainer that Paul Kelly opens at least leaps and bounds the song. We can get Paul Kelly to do it live initially, but leaps and bounds the song opens the entertainment on the day every year, because it's all about the MCG, it's all about Grand Final Day, and I think thereafter it's Australian talent. Let's fade it, let's get it on the stage and show everyone how we can stand alongside all the international acts.
Yeah, I like that idea. Probably be cheaper too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pump the money into something else. But I just don't...
Do you think they're looking for an international audience and international relevance when they do this?
Yeah, well, they are, but let's show... We do have some bands that have travelled pretty well too, Duff, internationally.
And let's face it, some of our international acts have been a pretty pale imitation of what lives up on the international stage. I mean, Meat Loaf.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. Yeah, 30 years prior, absolutely.
He was the vegan version of Meat Loaf by the time
who's
they
your
got
favorite,
him out there.
Who's your favourite Advance Australia fair of all the grand finals you've seen? Sorry, question without notice, but...
You know what? I'm going to vary that slightly. Tina Arena did Waltzing Matilda one year, and she's got a V8 voice.
I was there, I remember that. Was that 95? Carlton Geelong?
I reckon it might have been. Yeah. That was pretty specky.
There's also a guy who came on the back of a horse and did his own version of Waltzing Matilda that was pretty special. I reckon that was sometime in the late 80s. That was pretty good too.
Was that Kevin Bloody Wilson?
No.
Widgie Morther RSL?
I don't think Kevin Bloody Wilson would be up there. That's for sure. But look, I just think it's food for thought. They may well announce this year that they're having Australian talent, but I would love to see that. I really would.
Right, Quarters, the most pressing list management decision facing Western Australian clubs at the moment is obviously Brisbane's courtship of Lachie Neale. I'd be very surprised if a couple of other clubs haven't expressed interest.
Oh, yeah. It opens the door, doesn't it?
Now that they feel he might be gettable.
Be a disaster for Freo, I think.
So let's say...
Pick four. It's not pick four on its own.
Well, it's not even pick four. It's going to be pick five, at least. So... I don't think pick five gets it done. I think if you were Fremantle and Brisbane's offer was pick five, you'd be saying to them, yeah, come back and talk to us in 12 months. Because even if Fremantle has a terrible year and Lachie Neale is still convinced he wants to leave after 12 months, you get 12 months footy out of him.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Which means that if you end up with pick eight as your free agency compensation, well, pick five to pick eight... and you've got an extra year out of Lachie Neale, it's about the same anyway. Mm. So why wouldn't you go the extra 12 months?
See what happens in the extra 12 months could shape Lachie Neale's opinion too. Could see that they're tracking better. I'd tend to agree. It would have to be the greater deal of the century, I think, for them to agree to anything.
Yeah, well, it needs to be pick five and it needs to be a player, and that player needs to be in Fremantle's best 22 next year.
Yep.
That would be the way I'd be looking at it. And even then, I would be reluctant to do it, because if Lachie Neale goes, it means that someone like Adam Chera or Andrew Brayshaw, pretty much in their second season in the AFL, has to pretty much go into the midfield permanently and get really banged up and pushed around by bigger, stronger, more physically established players. So that's... the other cost of Lachie Neale going
down. The point is he is contracted for another year, so Freo can wait for the absolute best deal to come along, or he doesn't move. So the ball's in Frio's court.
Yeah, well, if I was Fremantle, I'd be pretending he's not moving under any circumstances and see what appeared on the table, in trade week. And that's assuming that Lachie is adamant that he's going. If Lachie, the mail we got late last week was that because Lachie Neale signed his contract early in 2016, before he had emerged as a Doig medalist and a AFL disposals record holder in a home and away round, he was basically running around on about $450,000 a year. And really, if you look at Lachie Neale's true value now, it's more like $700,000, $800,000. So he probably felt they were getting him cheap, probably wanted to explore his options on the marketplace. I'd imagine at the very least that what's going to come out of this is that Lachie Neale, his last year of his contract at Fremantle, which may become the first year of a fresh contract, depending on what negotiations yield, he will be running around on $700,000 or $800,000 next year.
So, in all likelihood, probably still under Jared Pollack, and he's a better player than Jared Pollack for mine.
He's a far better player than Jared.
But that's just the market and what it gives you at the moment. Interesting shenanigans there between St Kilda, North Melbourne.
You know what? There are two routes a club can take to get itself up the ladder, and one is, you know, getting in talent from other clubs. And the other is throwing every resource you have into the draft and development.
I think you combine them. You can certainly, I think the first step is the draft. And we've seen that with Carlton. And we saw it to a certain extent, we've seen it with Brisbane. But then when you establish a list that you think, okay, we're not there yet, but we've got the foundations, that's when you can go try via free agency or trading, whatever you want to do. And I think we've seen that. That's what Hawthorn's done. Very early days, they went to the draft when they bottomed out, and they've been able via free agency to keep themselves relevant for a while. So I think Geelong's done the same too.
The question I'd be asking if I was at St Kilda is, I'd pick out my six best young players, the best young talented players. So, you know, Jack Billings is in that. Paddy McCartan on draft selection is in that. You might have Nunes. You'd have Gresham. Gresham's in there for sure.
Seb Ross getting on a bit.
Loney, you know, these guys. Are they as good as they can possibly be at this stage of their development?
No.
And that's clearly a no. So therefore, fix that. Get yourself to 12th or 13th on the ladder with 10 wins and then go back to the market. And instead of paying way too much for Jared Pollack, who's an outside player anyway, you end up being able to lure one of the better free agents of that time. You get him at roughly his market value, and then you move forward as a club, and you may have enough salary cap money left to go after a very good player. Like, you know, if Josh Kelly comes out or something like that, you might be in the bidding race for a Josh Kelly.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
Now, right now, they just seem to be prepared to throw any amount of money at anyone for, you know.
It's almost as if they just need a win.
Yes, because they didn't have any on the field.
But no, I mean, they need a win off the field. Let's have a win. Let's have a win. Let's get some momentum going. It almost seems as if it's that sort of a move to me. There's a bit of that going around.
I go back and I look at Fremantle, and people will talk about 2012 to 2015, the first 4 years under Ross Lyon, as the biggest progress the club made, and I would disagree. I would say the club made its biggest progress between 2008 and 2012, and that was because they went to the draft, they realised they were cooked, their list was cooked, one of the oldest lists in the AFL, down near the bottom of the ladder, was highly paid, wasn't going anywhere. They brought in Simon Lloyd, who was a renowned development coach. They set up an academy. They took 12 draft picks, and they nailed the draft. And I think 8 of those players came through and became quite viable AFL players, and a couple of them, you know, guys like Stephen Hill, Hayden Ballantyne, became very good players. Stephen Hill's borderline All-Australian. Hayden Ballantyne was All-Australian. And then there were others, you know, Matt DeBoer, there was Nick Subin, there was Zach Clark. All these guys are around 100-game players for the club, all out of one draft. To me, Fremantle became a viable and vibrant club in the years between 2008 and 2011. There was only one final series.
We may be saying that about the last 2 years with Freo, which is why they've got to get this year right as well.
Yeah, but I don't see the same emphasis on development at the moment. And I think they're looking for mature age bodies, and I think they're looking for big fish. And I would rather see them say, we've got all these young players, so our focus absolutely has to be on that Andrew Brayshaw is the best he can possibly be, that Adam Cherrett is the best he can possibly be, that Luke Ryan is, that Brennan Cox is, And I think that's what St Kilda should be doing too. I just think that...
See, for me, that's a no-brainer at any AFL club.
It should be a given.
Yes.
But sometimes when you... I mean, AFL clubs develop blind spots.
Yeah.
And we've seen that at Fremantle, I think, with skill level. You look at a guy like Billings. In 2017, Billings took 59 shots on goal. Now, if Jack Billings kicks 40-19, he's had the sort of year that Dustin Martin had.
Mm.
And yet we're talking about him as an underachieving number three draft pick. Jack Billings is about 10 centimetres away...
He's frustrating.
..in a football context from being a superstar.
Yeah, he's a frustrating player.
But he's not there yet. And I think St Kilda, their first item of business needs to be to make sure they get guys like Billings there. Because if I was a rival club, I'd be looking at Billings and I'd be thinking, you know what, we get him and we do a bit of work on him and we could have a pretty special player.
I like the noise off the field. I like Brett Ratten's arrival. There's talk about Gubby Allen. I like the noise off
the
field.
How many clubs is Gubby going to work for?
Everyone. But I like the Brett Ratten arrival. He's a person. He's a people person. He's obviously a very experienced coach. Tactically, he's a great player manager and he's a good bloke. And I think he'll fit in well there and he'll be able to develop a lot of those players. So I like that move for St Kilda.
Now, you had a podcast question, I believe.
If I can find it, I did. Just bear with me, Duff. Okay, Lydia sends me, it's a two-pronged question.
Yep.
Two very different questions, too. As a Dockers fan who has just watched Jaden Stevenson win the Rising Star as a forward, why did Freo not pick him in the draft? We are desperate for forwards.
Probably not desperate for the type of forward that Jaden Stevenson is. You're desperate for the sort of forward that Wayne Carey was, or Matthew Pavlich was, or Johnny Brown was.
So Collingwood got him at...
Pick six.
Yeah, there were question marks over his health. He did have a heart ailment,
yep.
But it was a heart ailment that was easily fixable, I believe. And he...
No. It's a lifetime condition that has to be managed, and that was what scared a lot of clubs off. And it's a little bit more than just, it's been okay so far, so it'll be okay.
Yeah.
It's... If he becomes symptomatic, then it becomes life-threatening. So right now, he has the condition, but he's not symptomatic, and that he could remain that way for the rest of his career. Or he could come back after summer, and he becomes symptomatic, and then it's a whole different
situation. So there was a gamble involved.
Absolutely. And well, there was a feeling that Stevenson might slide a lot more
than six.
Down to pick six. So he was... He was probably regarded as he was probably regarded as one of the six, I think. So, and the six were the six as they ended up. So there was, you know, there was Cam Rayner, there was Andrew Brayshaw, there was Luke Davies, Uniac, there
Dow.
Was Adam Chera, Paddy Dow, and there was Jaden Stevenson, and they were regarded as the very top end.
And they've
of
proven
talent.
So too, haven't they? They've
yeah,
had
pretty
good
much.
They have had
yeah.
good years.
Yeah.
Well, good on Collingwood for the gamble and a great year. We should acknowledge him as the rising star too.
He's been absolutely fantastic. Kicked 30 goals. Not many kids come in and have to stump up and play the sort of role he plays.
And not only the goals too. I mean, and for a first-year player, remarkable. And it's just the smartness. He's a smart player. He runs into the right spaces. His second efforts are great. And he's also there. I'm sure if you look, I can't pull him off the top of my head, but there'd be a few assists in there as well.
And was there another question, Quarters?
There was. From Lydia again. Lydia's on fire today. And my second question is a little unusual. When someone lines up for a set shot, usually outside the 50-metre arc, players stand on the goal line trying to get a finger on it. Yet most of the time, the ball is just that little bit too high to reach. So why don't defending players do what happens in rugby throw-ins, I think she means line-outs, where two players hoist up another player and put them in the air to try and grab the ball? Is this illegal in the AFL?
So I quickly texted our umpiring consultant, Craig O'Donoghue.
Well, he would know.
Former Waffle umpire. And he said, it's a free kick if you do it. It was banned after Brisbane, then we're talking about the Brisbane Bears. Not
yes,
the Brisbane
I remember
Lions.
This. I do remember this.
At Carrara, put Michael Richardson on a bloke's shoulders when Simon Beasley was taking the infamous shot after the siren at Carrara in the 1980s.
Was that when a million players ran onto the ground and he was surrounded by...
I think
by
they had Christopher Skase on the mark. They had
there were a million spectators Paul, around him as he kicked it from memory.
Paul Cronin and Andy Solo won motorbike. Is it, he was on the mark as well.
For anyone out there who's
as
older
old as
than
us.
60, that's Matlock Police. So there's your answer, no.
No, it can't be done.
No.
I don't know why it can't be done, because it'd be very spectacular. And plus, they pretty much allow assault occasioning bodily harm on the line if you're trying to shepherd one through,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, they
so
do.
They might as well allow people lifting up people.
So but without going into detail with the four games, because we will do that on Thursday, what's your gut feel early, Duff? I'll just run through the games quickly. Thursday night, first qualifying final, Richmond v. Hawthorn.
I love the fact that Sicily is likely to play, but I think Richmond is still likely to win.
I'm going to pick Richmond. I think it's going to be really close. Yeah. I think Hawthorn's game style will trouble Richmond a little bit. I think they'll find a way, but I think I'm intrigued by the Richmond's recent numbers too. What sort of Richmond's going to show up? I'm sure it'll be a good Richmond.
They need to find top gear.
Yeah, they do,
because they've been going along in cruise control for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
So I agree with you. I think Richmond, but not by a lot. Friday, Melbourne v Geelong, first elimination final MCG. This is going to answer a lot of questions too. I'm leaning towards Melbourne at this stage.
I think if Melbourne handles the occasion, I think Melbourne wins this. And I think if Melbourne gets beyond this week, look out.
Yeah, I think it's two great midfields, but I think Gorn will be the difference this week. And I agree with you. I think they could go a long way. Saturday, Sydney v GWS at the SCG, the early Saturday game. I'm going to, and well, Buddy's back and Parker's back, which will help them, and you can never write Sydney off, but I'm going to lean towards GWS. The only thing that concerns me is there's a few, how many ins they have. There's a few big ins happening, Toby Green leading them, but I just don't think you can bring too many in for a final.
I get the feeling that we're going to get one big effort out of GWS, and I think it's going to be this week. And then I'll worry that all these guys that they bring back this week are going to pull up sore, and they may be a disappointment the following week. I'm going to tip GWS this week.
And finally, West Coast v Collingwood. Again, an intriguing game. I'm going to go West Coast on the pure fact it's a home game. I think they'll get two home finals. They'll win them both, and I think they'll play Richmond in the grand final. But I think my concern for Collingwood is they've got a few. Obviously, they have been decimated by injury this year. Got a VFL backline playing like an AFL backline.
Yeah.
It's incredible, really. And Pendlebury, he's been pretty crook.
Yeah, in hospital.
Yeah, viral meningitis, although they've denied that. But I think Pendlebury, for me, that really concerns me about it. He might come out and play a blinder, but I just worry about him this week.
Yeah, me too. I think it's very hard to get up off. If your virus is serious enough to have you hospitalised, that's a recovery of 3 or 4 weeks, not 1 or 2 weeks.
The other intriguing thing is Goldsack, whether you play him after 2 VFL games. His second VFL game, he hardly touched it.
I don't think in a big final.
I don't think your Pendlebury, yes, every day of the week. But, yeah, I'm not sure about that one. So, look, and, of course, we've got some big ins for West Coast led by Josh Kennedy. So
I just think Collingwood is going to have to be better than they were when they played West Coast at the MCG. And they're going to have to be better than they were when they played Fremantle here a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Those two things. And West Coast form, I mean, apart from a flat game against Essendon and a game when they were beaten by a very good opponent against Melbourne, really West Coast form at Optus Stadium since round one, and they weren't that bad in defeat against Sydney, has been pretty faultless. So
the way I look at it, summing up all that, is I think it's Richmond's flag to lose, and I think it's West Coast's grand final spot to lose. And I think West Coast, if you get there, anything can happen. It really can. The pressure is right on Richmond this final series. Let's hope. I think there was only one game. As much as we enjoyed the whole Richmond armchair ride last year, there was really only one game that was under 30 points, I think. There was a lot of one-sided results last year.
They were tested by Geelong in the first final, and they were tested by GWS early in the
final. I got a feeling we're going to have a pretty tight final series this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's four really good games coming up this week. Probably West Coast v Collingwood is the only one that could become a blowout if Collingwood don't handle the occasion. But it should be a great way to start it. Hopefully there's a massive crowd at the G on Thursday and Friday night. I would imagine pretty close.
I don't think there's any doubt.
Be pretty close to a full house at the SCG on Saturday, and there will be a full house at Optus Stadium.
Yeah, I think there'll be four very huge crowds.
All right, Quarters, we'll be back on Thursday to dissect the games and have a more detailed look at the ins and outs and the likely winners and losers, even though we've already taken an early stab at that.
That may change in 2 days. You never know.
It could do. A lot can change in 2 days. Thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll see you again on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.